Hello and welcome to Heresy, the show that fights received wisdom, grapples with complacency, and leaves popular opinion battered and bleeding in a pub car park. Whereupon Heresy returns to the scene dressed as a paramedic, looks kindly at popular opinion's wounds, then rubs in a mixture of lemon juice and salt, which is in fact, contrary to the fears of popular opinion, a surprisingly effective antiseptic. We've got a fantastic panel here to squirt lemons at complacency tonight. Journalist Lucy Mangan and comedians Arthur Smith and Frank Skinner. Let's get started with our first received opinion. Stay with me, plead Shakespeare's sister, and perhaps they're addressing their plea to Thomas Gainsborough or J.M.W. Turner. 75% of our live audience here tonight agree with the statement, we should save Britain's art treasures from being sold abroad. Now, I don't know much about art, but I know what I like. Biscuits. But we're talking about art. People think that conserving our national masterpieces is an important use of government money. I agree. I'd love to see an expensive new art gallery in my neighbourhood, as long as it had an A&E department, two operating theatres and a kidney dialysis machine. But it's possible to believe in spending money on art without being hung up on the old stuff. I think it will be fascinating to see all of the works ever created by Gilbert and George, Tracy Emin and the Chapman brothers brought together in the same skip. Frank Skinner, when you personally go to a gallery, is it important to you that something is an old classic, it's been described as important, or are you open-minded about it?
Well, I have to admit, I generally go to the gift shop first. And I like to see what's on the bags and the placemats, because there's nothing more frustrating than going into an art gallery than going to the shop on the way out and realise that you've missed one of their big things, the biggest selling postcard you didn't see in the flesh.
Lucy, let me ask you, do you think we're hamstrung by a prejudice that the old is better than the new?
I'm hamstrung by prejudice that the old is better than the new, but I don't mind it leaving the country. I don't understand modern art. To me, art is, you know, fancy frame. I know I'm basically 108 years old and a retired colonel.
Yeah, no, I see that.
I know that.
The phrase you always hear in this is, save it for the nation. I mean, you never hear that phrase anywhere else, do you? I mean, you didn't, like, save, you know, David Beckham for the nation.
I'd save David Beckham.
And which nation is it?
I think we are too hung up on national boundaries. I mean, I only ever go to art galleries if I'm on holiday, so I'm much more likely to see a Rembrandt in Germany than I would if it was here. The quicker they sell it, the faster I'll see it. But you say, Lucy, that you don't know very much about art. Do you go to the National Gallery?
No. I have been on school trips, I think, but no.
You don't know then about the Madonna of the Pinks? That was a recent one, wasn't it?
That was the Virgin Mary playing snooker.
They paid £25 million for that or something, but it was on loan from the Duke of Northumberland.
This is the other thing, I don't, for the nation, doesn't it normally mean bunging a lot of millions of pounds to someone who basically won it during a card game in their Florentine palazzo in 1736?
There's a lot of great works. I mean, the Queen's got loads of Leonardo cartoons, but not cartoons as we think of them in private eye. We can't see them. We have to pay to get in to see them. You know, I think the Queen should open up her entire house, we'll all go round and have cheese and sausage on a stick and look at her Raphaels, missus.
So are we talking about British art now, or just the art in Britain?
Well, it's tricky to define, isn't it? I mean, Holbein painted more pictures here of Henry VIII than he ever did abroad.
But the fact that he was here when he painted them is not the point, is it? If Shakespeare had written his plays in Ireland, he wouldn't be one of the great Irish playwrights. He'd have just been someone who liked a bit of peace and quiet.
I mean, Britain's been this sort of colonial power, so the National Art Collection involves all sorts
of things. If there was a massive cricket memorabilia museum in Tokyo, you could see that people might argue that that stuff should be sent back to its original country.
Well, and I think we've got the same problem. W.G. Grace striding the streets of Tokyo.
I don't think they have the actual living people there.
Now, Arthur Smith, you are a modern artist. Tell me about your exhibition and whether you deserve government money.
Yeah, the credit crunch has kicked in. I only sold mine for £7, the whole collection. I did actually email Charles Saatchi and offer the whole lot of my works for £4.99. And then I came down to 99p and he still wouldn't buy it. You know, that's one of the problems with art. How do you know if it's good or not?
You could have a referendum on what people like and what they don't like. So you could just sell the unpopular stuff. If you take that statue of Nelson Mandela in Westminster Square, I hate that. I'd be very happy for that to be sold.
Why do you hate that?
Well, I don't like the way he's holding his hands. He looks like he's just washed his hands and he can't find a towel. It really puts me off.
But also, did you know the one of Winston Churchill? Someone told me in Parliament Square that that's the only one that's actually got some sort of device within it that keeps it warm to stop pigeon poo coagulating on him.
Is that right?
I doubt it, but that's what I was told.
Do we have to sell the whole thing as well? Couldn't we sell... You know the way the Greeks, they kept the main body of Venus de Milo and just sold the arms? Couldn't we do that? Say if we could keep the cow in formaldehyde and the shark in formaldehyde, but put them in the same tank and sell the tank.
Or maybe you could, like, just cut bits off, you know.
Exactly. A fin.
Damien Hirst chop.
Yeah.
You don't have to vandalise the art to do that. This is what I'm saying. There are about 150 Turners in the National Gallery, and they're all the same sort of blurry white landscapes. You could just about see a boat.
Well, look, you're disqualifying yourself here, Vicky, from talking about art by this dismissive stuff of Turner, who was a great master.
Well, you tell me why we need 150 when we could just have three.
Or just 4,000 of mine.
They are quite blurry, but they're the best ones, the blurry seascapes. I'd keep the blurry seascapes.
Those you'd keep?
Keep some William Blake's, but most of the stuff British artists have done are just horses.
It's not just the National Collection either. There's always a big fuss in the paper. If a private collector, an aristocrat, sells off an important painting in their house to get inheritance tax, there's a huge fuss and we'd never have seen it anyway. Do you think, Lucy, there's an element of xenophobia? Is there a feeling the foreigners can't look after it? If they get a Rembrandt, they'll eat it.
I know, it's this idea that if you send something back to Italy, it's the same as Bert setting fire to it in the National Portrait Gallery. I don't understand it. If you like art, if it's your thing, I can't see that it matters to you whether it's here. As long as it still exists, aren't you still almost as happy just to know that it's out there and being appreciated?
On the other hand, if you suddenly feel like you want to go and look at Madonna of the Pinks, you don't have so far to go as if it's in a gallery in Sydney.
Or you could buy a postcard.
Yeah. Well, postcard. Sister Wendy Beckett is probably the leading art historian of this generation. You know, she just sat in a caravan for years looking at postcards of art and wrote about it. And then they did a TV series where they took her to see these works of art and they said, what do you think? And she said, well, you know, they're pretty much like the postcards.
But when you go, Frank, I know in all seriousness you love to go to an art gallery and painting. Hand on your heart, would you know if it were a cheap copy?
You see, it's this kind of argument that got Bjorn Again formed, isn't it?
Exactly. And who would you rather see, Bjorn Again or ABBA?
That's not as straightforward as you might think, is it? Now, ABBA looks so terrible. They look like those non-putrefied saints from the labyrinths of Rome.
I'd rather go for Bjorn Again.
I'd rather
see... Mind you, it's still about the 10th Bjorn Again.
Well, that's it, because Bjorn Again is the kind of picture of Dorian Gray in ABBA's attic.
Yeah.
You see, I brought it back to art quite neatly. Thank you very much.
Now, what about the dodgy stuff? You know, people talk about the Elgin marbles. There was a court case a couple of years ago involving old masters that were looted by the Nazis and are now held in the British Museum. And the judge ruled that the British Museum Act cannot be overridden by a moral obligation to return works known to have been plundered. Why not?
I don't know. I would have thought they should go back where they came from in that particular circumstance.
Well, anyway, you could just look at them on the internet.
Yeah. You can look at the Colossus of Rhodes on the internet, and that disappeared about 2,000 years ago. The internet is basically better than art. In so many ways.
Well, I think we should go to the audience on this. Put your hands up if you've never been to the National Gallery. All right, that gentleman there, let's take the microphone over to him. Sir, were you somebody who said that you agreed British art should be conserved for the nation?
It's a bit like the Elgin Marbles thing, I think. If the people within the country have created that art, I think it should stay there, because it represents the environment within which it's created.
And yet you've never actually been to the National Gallery, so you want it to be there, but you don't really want to see it.
No, you're quite right.
You know, people were sad about Woolworths, but they never went there.
Now, what about this gentleman here? Have you ever been to the British Museum?
No.
What about the National Gallery?
No.
Do you believe that the government should maintain those institutions and keep the treasures there?
If it's good for the tourism industry, then they should keep it. Keep a lot.
Yeah, we're just saving them for the nation so that foreigners can see them.
Well, on that piece of perfect logic, I think let's wrap that one up and say that we must open our minds to the new. I believe that artists like Stella Vine and Sarah Lucas are already worthy of comparison to Turner and Gainsborough. I often compare them and find that they're much, much worse. Nevertheless, we have to keep breathing life and money into fresh talent, and Britain really does have some amazing painters. But I'll admit, at the risk of sounding unpatriotic, I did get three Polish ones to do my bathroom. Let's move on to our next topic. Was Edward White's Puffin Billy, written in 1952. Of course, if Billy were Puffin today, he'd be doing it in the road with his collar turned up, getting wet, missing his lunch and being frowned at by passers-by. Nevertheless, 85% of our unsympathetic audience agree with the statement, the smoking ban has worked out rather well. You health fascists! All enjoying the clean air? Well, it's not so clean. Without the mask of cigarette smoke, pubs stink of BO, bad breath and urine. God forbid the ban is extended to my living room. But even if I didn't smoke, I hope I wouldn't wish discomfort on those who do. What happened to sympathy for each other's weaknesses? Why are we so happy to see addicts exiled and shamed on the pavement? What happened to live and let die? Arthur Smith, do you think what we've gained in fresh air, we've lost in tolerance?
Well, I mean, I think if you are a smoker, and I'm sorry to report I am, you do spend a lot of time huddled against the wind. And I think it's bad for pubs, not only because people are never in them, but also because you don't have to go to the pub. They buy beer to take away from the supermarket and stand outside the pub smoking with the people who are in the pub. You never really need to go in one anymore. It's bad. Think of all the smokers will be dying off even earlier because they're frozen to death outside. It's going to cost the NHS a fortune.
Lucy Mangan, you don't smoke, but do you feel sorry for the ones that do, or do you think they deserve to be just exiled in the snow?
For the purposes of the game, I feel sorry for them, and I think it's an outrageous trampling of our civil liberties. But secretly, I rejoice.
So secretly, you feel that a cinnamon-scented room is more important than basic human tolerance?
Yes.
What about you, Frank? Do you feel sorry for smokers?
Well, I don't go in pubs at all, so it didn't affect me. But now when I walk past pubs, I get secondary smoking. Because there's like 40 people outside. So I seem to have suffered.
Well, you know how it's going to go. That, you know, eventually they'll stop it on the street as well. So that eventually there will be one place, and it'll be like Canvey Island. And if you want to have a cigarette, you have to get a train there. All the way there, you're being talked to by therapists. And then when you get there, you're bundled into this little kind of enclosure, and people beat you with sticks in there. And then you can have a fag. That's how it'll end up.
Maybe you could just smoke in art galleries, because there won't be anything left in there of any value. No people, no paintings, it'll be fine. Do you know you can smoke in prison? You can smoke in your prison cell. And there are some prisons, like Wakefield, where the prisoners can smoke, but the guards can't. Now, that's encouraging people to be criminals. I think the whole rise in crime in this country is people who just want to smoke indoors.
I was reminded just today that it was only 7 years ago there was a smoking room in the hospital I was in. And it seems incredible how fast things change. It wasn't that long ago you could smoke on trains. It was probably only about 6 or 7 years ago, wasn't it?
But that was a great tradition in hospitals. If your wife was having a baby, you paced up and down in the waiting room, chain smoking.
Now you've got to go to a shelter 7 miles away.
Well, now you have to go to the birth, for goodness sake.
Frank, you mentioned before that you don't often go to the pub. I don't really drink. I know you don't drink at all.
Yes.
And from my point of view, if drinking were banned tomorrow, the streets would be cleaner, I'd be safer, there'd be less violence and vomit, it would be a cleaner world. But I'm happy for other people to drink, because it's what they want to do. Surely you feel the same way?
Well, I'd much rather they ban drinking than smoking, because nobody ever smokes so many cigarettes that they get into a car and drive into you head-on.
Yeah, no one has had so many fags they get violent, have they? It's only if they haven't had fags, in fact.
Well, that was the thing. These prisoners... In California, you can't smoke in the prisons. You can't even smoke on death row. So they stop people from smoking on death row because it might damage their health. And then they go to the gas chamber.
Yeah, no, I remember reading about an incident where the bloke was about to be executed and the classical thing, have you got any last wishes? He said, can I have a fag? And they said, no.
Do you think he was hoping they'd make him go outside?
You see, let me ask you this, as because I can tell you are really a proponent of the smoking ban. What a pub is for is for a community of people to consume a toxic substance that's poisonous, is gradually killing them and might lead them to harm others. Once they're doing that, why not let them smoke?
Because the difference between smoking and drinking is that if you're drinking, you're only harming yourself.
That's
not true.
And then you have the indirect effects afterwards. But with a cigarette, as soon as you light it up, other people are affected by it, by the smell, by the damage to your lungs from passive smoking, and all the rest of it. And if they don't like it, there's no way they can avoid it without actually leaving the building, because it's so pervasive.
But places smell much worse since the smoking ban. I go to gigs, right, and there's lots of terrible smells that emanate from the human body. You couldn't smell them when the room was full of smoke, but now
Stale smells don't give you cancer.
Well, now, I'm going to say...
It's funny you should say that. I have some research.
I am actually present. I know I'll get furious letters for saying this, but I am going to stick my neck out and say the link between passive smoking and people getting cancer, compared to the link between people getting drunk and killing people in their cars and punching them in the head and killing them in the road, is so tenuous. I mean, it might happen. It's possible that people get cancer from passive smoking, but people definitely get death from being run over by drunk drivers. So why not just ban everything that might hurt people?
You're right.
I should probably clarify, I'm not saying that smoking is a good thing. One plus of the smoking ban is that it's really hit the tobacco companies. Last year, Philip Morris, the world's largest cigarette manufacturer, suffered a 21% rise in profits, clearing just $2 billion. So it's really hit home there. What about people's homes? It used to be that you didn't smoke in somebody's home if they just had a baby or they were a sort of hygiene freak.
You see, I let people smoke in my house. I've got to become more consistent. My ideology is shot.
A friend said to me once, can you smoke outside because my dog has got bronchitis? I mean, what is more important, a human being's pleasure or a dog's life? Disgust.
But, I mean, in the end, it is stupid smoking, and it would be better if children came into an environment where they didn't even have the possibility of doing it. I mean, no-one smoked before Sir Walter Raleigh. I mean, we should be suing him, really.
What about obesity? That's bad for you. What about saying no fat people allowed in pubs?
No eating. No. Somebody cheered there.
Yeah, but clearly they are damaging their own health. And it's said that they take up so much time on the National Health Service that indirectly they're damaging our health. So you could point the finger at fat people and say, I'm getting sort of secondary obesity from you. You'd be able to get away with it in
those. We should blame Walter Raleigh again. Didn't he bring back potatoes as well?
I think
he brought
exactly,
cigarettes and chips.
Yeah.
Get him.
Fags and chips. That's his legacy in the universe.
Well, he did pioneer cycling as well, which is good for you. Slow burner. As they used to say in pubs.
Where's Elizabeth Shepherd? Over there?
I'm strongly in favour of the smoking ban, or rather, it turned out rather well, which I think the question was, because I think there's a lot of entertainment to be had for watching people smoking outside buildings in their shirt sleeves. The smokers are really obvious and so sort of persecuted. I think it's quite an entertaining sight.
That's so mean.
They should look a bit guiltier. I do think that when you pass them outside pubs.
They do look guilty. They look very
never look guilty
sheepish.
To me. They look quite brazen. At least when we smoke behind the bike shed, if anyone came round, we sort of half clenched our fist and hit the cigarette a bit.
Yes, but you were seven.
And it was a pipe.
Let's draw that topic to a close with a final reminder that we all have weaknesses, and if you stand by while people are exiled and banned, one day they'll come for you. Let's at least admit that the ban is intolerant and disrespectful because it prevents smokers from making their own choices as if they're too naive and stupid to know what they're doing to themselves. Frankly, if I want to smoke and run the risk of bunions, that is my lookout. Let's move on to the next topic.
It was an itsy-bitsy, teeny-weeny, yellow polka dot bikini that she wore for the first time today.
An itsy-witsy, teeny-weeny, yellow polka dot bikini. What a lovely outfit that would be. But not at a funeral. People would disapprove, wouldn't they? That's because we have strong ideas about what should and shouldn't be worn for certain occasions. 77% of our audience agree with the statement, a shell suit is inappropriate attire for a court appearance. Of course, it's easy to think what kind of fool would wear sports gear to court. You might just as well dress up in a dinner jacket and bow tie to play snooker. I mean, who'd do that? And somehow we look at the defendant in the shiny nylon sweatpants and we think he's probably guilty. But Lucy Mangan, wouldn't you think a truly dangerous criminal would be clever enough to put a suit on for court?
I think you could make trials a lot more efficient if you just let people have their own way, because you could, you know, someone walks in a shell suit and, you know, right, you can't be bothered to adhere to standard conventions of dress even when your life and liberty is at risk. I don't see you adhering to many other social mores. Off you go, son. See you in 8 to 12 months, possibly through a little grill.
The sort of Daily Mail school of justice.
But in fact, if you think about it, the clever criminal is the one who turns up looking the way that jurors think of as innocent. If someone's innocent enough to wear a shell suit, they're probably innocent to the crime.
What do you know of clever criminals, Vicky?
Far too much.
If you're ever arrested, you have to say to the arresting officer, "It's a fair cop, Gov. You've done me up like a kipper, and no mistake, I'm bang to rights." And then when he reads this out in court, and the magistrate listens to it, well, you're going to get straight off. Well, I did get arrested once for breach of the peace and possession of a megaphone. When I was... Yeah, I did. It was at the Edinburgh Festival one year as a show that got a bit out of hand. And I turned up, I thought it would be good, in a full kilt, a big red beard. Got 7 years.
The problem is, if you outlaw the shell suit in court, you're going to make Jimmy Savile exempt from prosecution. I think that could well backfire.
Would you, if you were on a jury, would you be more suspicious of the defendant in the shell suit?
Well, the judges always say to the jury, don't they, I know it's been in the papers for the last 6 weeks that this person has been a drug dealer and a wife beater, but I want you to put all that to one side and just listen to the evidence. However, don't worry too much, because I'm going to find him guilty because I don't like button-down collars. It's outrageous. I want the bloke to be judged, or the woman. There are women criminals, I believe. I want them to be judged on what they've done.
The only safe way would be if everyone was naked. Don't you think that would be a good
idea? I'd be a bit worried about the gavel. Well, look at the way... I mean, anyone who wears what looks like a string wig, once you've got people wearing those, all bets are off, I would have thought. I associate shell suits with certain parts of the country, because some people think of them as Scousers. I always think of them as like an Essex thing. They used to say, if you want to hear the sound of the sea at Southend, all you have to do is hold a shell suit to your ear.
Obviously, it's a class thing. I mean, obviously it is. Why is it, do you think, Lucy, not just in court, in all sorts of situations, people have ideas where they see someone in a shell suit, it must be a certain sort of person. Why?
Because it usually is. No, look, all clothes, everything we do, everything we wear, everything we say, the accent we say it in, they all, especially in Britain, every time, you know, an Englishman opens his mouth, he makes another Englishman despise him. Same goes for clothes. They're a code.
Do you remember Frankie Burnham, the wife of the politician who got in terrible trouble because she turned up to the unveiling of the statue to the Queen Mother in a short dress with a big flower on it. And everybody said, oh, this is absolutely disgraceful, not appropriate for the event.
Well, it's like at a funeral, say, people say, oh, well, yeah, but we want it to be a happy occasion. But if you actually turn up in a sparkly bikini, they don't like it.
I know, everyone else has just broken out the navy blue and you're like, oh, God, what have I done?
I mean, I'm all for abandoning all rules of clothes, really. I think we should all just go around in sacks. We wouldn't judge people by what they wear. I mean, I was reading a woman said, I judge a man by the shoes he wears. And you think, well, what a ridiculous way to judge someone. You should judge them by their character, by what they say, how they act, how they juggle. You know, not by what they're wearing.
But you can't help but have a first impression of someone from their clothes, and it's up to you then to say, oh, that is my first impression, now I will listen to what they've got to say, and I will not hold to that first impression. I will be swayed by their humour.
Well, so Olympian is my idealism, I don't even notice what people are wearing. Vicky could be naked next to me here now.
I am.
Oh, yeah.
I do think it's a lot harder for women. I often think, for men, you know when it says black tie on something, the main reason for men to actually turn up in black tie, rather than these idiots who turn up in jeans, is that they want to keep that dress code going, because they're saved ever having to think what's appropriate and what's not. A man going to a statue of the Queen Mother's unveiling, It's quite a weird thing to dress for. You won't have been to three of them. Man just puts a suit on and it's easy. What should Frankie Burnham have worn?
It's just a misjudgment. I mean, she obviously went for, oh, it's a memorial. Relatively happy, staid but happy occasion. I'll wear something vaguely summery. I didn't understand why everyone, you know, tore her to pieces. Surely you would just feel sorry for someone. You would feel so embarrassed yourself if you'd made that misjudgment to be the only kind of bright spot in a sea of black and navy blue. And that's punishment enough.
God, I didn't realise that everyone tore her to pieces. I'm surprised I didn't see that in the paper. It's like Lord of the Flies.
I think it's time we went to the audience. Where's Anne Baxter? Anne Baxter, you strongly agree that a shell suit is inappropriate attire for a court appearance. What would you assume about someone who turned up to court in a shell suit?
Guilty.
There's no messing about there.
Have you ever been on a jury?
No.
Thank God. Do you think it's very important if you get a party invitation and it says lounge suit or something like that, do you think it's very important to follow it exactly?
Yes.
Why is that?
Because that's the way I've been brought up to behave.
It is true. I don't know if any of you has ever happened to you, I've turned up to a fancy dress party only to discover it wasn't fancy dress.
What were you wearing?
I was dressed as a piece of asparagus. In fact, I was the hit of the party now, I think. And someone nibbled me at the end.
Did your urine smell funny the next day?
Let's look for Raj Visram. Raj Visram, you strongly agree that a shell suit's inappropriate in court. Why is that?
I think so. I think especially for the barristers. I think that's just a real no-no.
Well done. I can't believe none of us thought of that game.
What do you do for a living?
I'm an IT manager.
And would you go to work in a shell suit?
No. Only on Dress Down Friday.
Have you ever been on a jury?
No.
If you were, would you assume that the person in the suit and tie was more innocent than the person in the shell suit?
Not if they're a banker. No.
Let's wind that up by saying, don't be a slave to fashion diktats, and don't make assumptions based on what people are wearing. The shiniest shell suit may hide the most innocent heart. But I'll admit, in the name of honesty, that there are times when it's easier to follow the dress code. If I'm attending church, I will wear a skirt and blouse. If I'm going fell walking, I'll wear stout shoes. And if I'm wearing an all-in-one latex gimp suit with a snorkel attached, I know it's a Thursday afternoon. Thanks so much to my guests, Arthur Smith, Lucy Mangan, and Frank Skinner. Good night.